Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9-3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Folks, I got to tell you, I've been teasing this now for about a week that I was going to have some very special guests on today. There's a show out there on Discovery that I'm very, very excited for. I wanted to introduce you guys into it. I told you I had a little bit of homework for you to do. There's a show out there called Lost Monster Files. I'm very excited about that. I wanted you to check out. You know, there's some shows out there that get launched that I'll say in the cryptozoology field that they tried and they maybe missed a little bit. This one, I think, hit a home run. And that's the reason I wanted you to check this out. You know, cryptozoology is one of those fields where I think maybe people think, well, it's one of the ones where it's more real to people. You know, the ghost field, it's maybe your imagination. With aliens, well, maybe you just are, you know, again, maybe you had a bad trip. Maybe people are having mental illness. Maybe it's something having to do with drugs, something like that. We've all got skeptics out there, right? To me, this is the field that's real. You're out in the woods. Hey, there's a bunch of different species we haven't discovered yet. This show, this team is taking the files of renowned cryptozoologist Ivan Sanderson, the first scientist to do it. They're taking real science out into the field, real equipment that you haven't, I haven't seen a lot of this stuff yet. And they're combining all of it, knowledge, science, and the files of the first cryptozoologist to really introduce it. And they're going out there and, believe it or not, finding evidence. I saw evidence myself. And I got to jump into it. Let's get into it and talk with our guest today. Field scientist and tech expert Charlie Mushaw is with us today, as well as cryptozoologist Brittany Barbieri. And I want to just, rather than read their bios and then bring them in, I want to talk to them about their experience with them today. The show airs Wednesdays on Discovery at 10 p.m. Eastern Time and Pacific. Let's bring them in right now. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome for the first time to Darkness Radio, Brittany Barbieri and Charlie Mushaw. Folks, welcome in to Darkness Radio.
Thanks for having us, Tim. I really appreciate it. I am Charlie Mushaw. I think I'll let Brittany introduce herself before we get into backstories.
Hi, Brittany. How are you?
I'm good, Tim. How are you? Yep, Brittany Barbieri here from Lost Monster Files. I'm excited to be here. Love your show. So thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here. Charlie, I want to start with you. Give us your background a little bit as to how you got into this field. What inspired you to look for monsters, of all things, out in the woods? I mean, it's one thing to love nature. It's another to say, hey, there's something out in nature other than just what we see and what we know.
Sure. I think also just the word monster, just to set the stage as we have this conversation. The show is called Lost Monster Files. And for me, a monster generally originates from a story, right? It's not an animal. A monster is a construct that reflects the values and attitudes of people at a given time. So when we talk about cryptids as monsters, we have to look at, you know, why did this story persist throughout time, right? Maybe it started as a cautionary tale to keep kids from going in the woods to get eaten by a mountain lion, mm-hmm. right? Maybe it's as simple as that, like, oh, don't go whistling in the woods or, you know, something's going to get you. But then a little bit of embroidery gets tacked on, and a little bit of embroidery gets tacked on, and it winds up being this way overly inflated concept to the point of the topics that you were talking about earlier, where you start to put in metaphysical and supernatural elements. So for us, I won't say for us, I'll only speak for me. I'll let Brittany say her own.
Okay.
I won't wind that back. So for me, the interest in these animals comes from a place of hope. It's not fear. It's not the monster story that excites me. It's the possibility that there could be an animal in the woods somewhere in the ocean. Brittany knows my favorite flavor is sea monster. So like, I just love the possibility, right? It's exciting. It's optimism. It's hope. And that feeling has been with me since I was a kid, right? Like the first time I heard about Bigfoot, I have no idea when it was, but it was a great time to be a kid in the 80s. You know, you had monster specials and movies and everything spooky and in between, and then you had fun stuff like Harry and the Hendersons, which I know is cheesy.
Oh, yeah.
But like,
no.
You know, I was like a 7-year-old that you're just like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So you get hooked. There's no formal Sasquatch track in higher education, however. So I couldn't really go to study weird X-Files type creatures. But I could study natural resource science, and the way that field of study works, it's very broad. If you want to continue into graduate work, you generally pick a specialty. But my undergraduate work was in natural resource science, and that's sort of Brittany's heard me jokingly refer to my level of geology knowledge as rocks for jocks. So, you know, you get into your geology, and from there you branch a little bit into like soil science. You do some plant science and some botany, a little bit of biology and animal science. And then I decided that I had enough, and I moved on because I was also taking technology related coursework as electives. Mm-hmm. So my graduate work is actually where the technology piece comes into it. And a couple of years ago, I decided to formally start documenting my research into the intersection of history, folklore, and verifiable science, something that I'd always been interested in. But I was like, hey, you know what? I actually could do this as a hobby. And like, so I wrote a book, I started a podcast, and, you know, it kind of snowballed from there. And I found a way to meld basically my academic and professional interests into personal passions, and wound up teaming up with Brittany and company and getting to use those skills. It's an honor to have access to Ivan Sanderson's archive.
Yeah.
Like, to be clear, like, this is, you know, the godfather of cryptozoology, and this opportunity, it's really something special. And it's just been a lifelong journey of seemingly non-interconnected paths that all came together. I was at the right place at the right time. And I know that sounds cheesy, but sometimes, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get. And I had been putting in the work, and it all just converged, and I got to have this experience. So that was a lot of airtime. We'll be quiet and
that's fine.
To Brittany, but that's how I got here.
That's fine. Now, Brittany, you are a cryptozoologist, and with this, first of all, let's talk a little bit about your background. This isn't your first go around on television, obviously. And with this, you have an extensive background. Let's talk a little bit about your background. And let's also talk about the fact that you're having a go, like Charlie just said, you're having a go at the godfather of cryptozoology and his lost case files. So first, let's dig into your background. Let's talk a little bit about having to go at these files and digging into this in the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I don't have like the cool background that Charlie has. I will say Charlie's expertise on multiple levels really helps aid the field a lot. It really does. But I will say he is a mad scientist with gaming, and he's incredible at making games. I will tell you that.
Oh, just there you go.
Keep that in mind. He is amazing with this. He does not like to share a lot of it, but he's excellent at it. For my background, I actually grew up on an exotic animal ranch. So we were heavily involved with animals, exotic animals from a very young age, doing different types of rescue, relocation, and so forth. And growing up in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, superstition and types of folklore tales, right? They would just congregate through the Rockies, through different people, different tribes, indigenous, and so on and so forth. And so growing up, we grew up very open-minded. We were Irish German. We had a lot of traditions and different cultural background to us that kept that open mind pretty easy for us, honestly, to keep us an open mind in our family. And growing up in the Rockies, when I was 8 years old, my mother and I actually had an experience when we were out feeding the llamas. We had an open barn and then we could like run to the house. And, we've heard anything from a mountain lion to a bobcat to a grizzly, and animals make horrible sounds in the woods and horrifying sounds. And this one evening, my father was out of town. The boys were much older. My oldest brother is 12 years older than me. He was out in town and we were feeding, and this horrific guttural call came from across the street at our neighbor's, right above our neighbor's house. And I just remember looking at my mom. We both went pale and I dropped the grain bucket and I ran in the house. And then I realized I just left my mom out to die, like with whatever that was. So
Yikes.
I bolted back down outside and she had locked herself in the barn. And we looked at each other and then we shared it with my dad and my brothers. And they're like, well, now we need to tell you what we saw. So they had had an experience as well. And so we never. We're in a space where we couldn't talk about this stuff, but growing up in the animal field, I was very familiar with a lot of these names. My dad watched Johnny Carson. Ivan came on Johnny Carson, and a lot of people don't know this. He was huge in zoology, right? And so he actually helped bring the animals onto Johnny Carson. So he started that whole late night TV with wild animals on late night, right? And so he had this incredible passion of saying, I got a lot of indigenous people in different locations and regions and continents that are talking about these animals that my scientific community won't listen to. They're just kind of saying they don't exist. It's not real. And he would challenge them. And he finally was like, I'm going to Africa and I'm making an exhibition myself and I'm going to find out what I can find out. And he would write about this stuff, but he also, I mean, there's extensive literature from other scientists that had met with him and didn't always appreciate his challenge that he would give them. But I found it fascinating. And I remember growing up saying, well, they did discover this animal and they did discover this animal. So I always stayed in the animal field because of my family, but I did get into film and television at a very young age. I did love the creative on in front of the camera, on the backside of the camera, doing all the basics. But my life always took me back to cryptozoology, ufology, and paranormal. Like I could never escape it ever. And so I got into stunts. I did stunts for a little while. I did animal training pretty extensively with my brother, with his company called Crocstars.tv. And we did a lot of that. But cryptozoology was always something that I loved because I had such an extensive animal background. And I just, yeah, it's great to know and talk about all these animals that we already have in zoological parks. But what about the ones we haven't uncovered yet? Papua New Guinea discovers new ones quite often, honestly. And I wanted to be the one to discover something new, to change the narrative that we haven't discovered everything. And then once you start peeling away those layers, you start to learn there are still areas on this globe where locals are talking about these animals, but they're being lumped into folklore and superstition because they're saying they can't exist. But realistically, I think they can. There's a tangible animal, something that you can actually touch, feel, see, and smell living in these areas. But we're never going to know if we don't take that risk to go see it. So yeah, I applied all of that. And then I just did extensive background. And it was interesting because I loved Ivan Sanderson so much. I idolized him in the sense because he challenged the narrative, he challenged science, and he had the academic to do so. He was adorned in different credentials to do so. But my favorite was when I became a ufologist, that intersection collided. Ivan Sanderson and J. Allen Hynek were friends. And he had done extensive work on USOs, underwater submergible objects. And when I got into ufology, that was my expertise. I went for the ocean. So that was where Charlie and I obviously could have a good time talking because he loved the ocean and what the mystery was in the ocean. And I love the mystery of the ocean. But there's still a lot on land we need to look into. And so being able to walk into this archive, and I mean, Charlie had seen it prior to me and he just was waiting to see my reaction because this was, for me, it was, I broke down. I don't know, Charlie, how many times? I cried probably a lot, like a little girl, a lot.
I mean, don't say it like a negative. You were moved.
Not a negative. It was just moving.
It wasn't like a little girl. This was a culmination. You are what I would consider a Sanderson specialist. You know, we talk about the difference between generalists and specialists. And as a Sanderson specialist, we'll say it was cool to see. It was cool to see your response.
I did. I broke down. And I broke down because, as Charlie and I have talked about this, you know, he didn't have any children. So it was kind of like this torch that I felt was passed to Charlie and I and the team to go, okay, guys, we have to do like a lot of service to his name. Like, we can't just walk away from this and be like, whatever. You know, this is huge. This is huge for zoology. This is huge for cryptozoology. And it's huge for science. It's massive for science. It's the recognition that we're not talking about something interdimensional. We're not talking about something paranormal. We are talking about something real, real science of animals. And that's really where I'm proud to bring it back home to. Let's bring cryptozoology back to where it belongs in zoology.
What I love about the show, and even if you're not familiar with Ivan Sanderson, if you have no idea whatsoever who he is, what I love about the show is you guys have brought the weight of what he's done to the show. You can feel it, even if you're not familiar with him. So you show the clips of him on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, the early clips of him there. You bring the weight of the volumes of research that you show there. You bring the voice back of Sanderson through tapes. You bring everything that should be, you bring Sanderson back from the dead, and he's right there with you and walks you through these cases that you're going through with him. So he's right there in lockstep with you as you're investigating. It's a brilliant touch. And you feel like he's almost guiding your team through the investigation. And it's almost like you said, he's passed that torch, but he's literally right there with you and saying, here it is. Here's the torch. Just finish this up for me, if you would. I know you guys have a little bit more than I had in the day, but just if you would just finish this up for me. And that's the brilliant touch of the show that I love about it.
Well, thank you.
One, thank you. Two, it'll never make the air. So here's the behind the scenes thing. But we all have our own version of an Ivan Sanderson impression that very respectfully has been injected into conversations over the course of it. Troy does a really good one that he'll just start saying things at Brittany as Ivan Sanderson. I've definitely on a down day, we were riding around doing a little bit of exploring together as a group in Alaska, and I just started riffing as Ivan Sanderson on everything, and I think Justin nearly fell out of his chair. So there's a lot of love in the group for not just the research, but him as a person, because if you watch those old clips of him, the man had a sense of humor too. It wasn't all serious business all the time, right? He was a multifaceted person, just like all of us. And he, so yes, I'm glad that you appreciate the amount of Sanderson that's in the show, because it's important to us. And it does feel like he's a part of the continuation of the research while we're out and about, and we try not to forget that, and that just manifests in a couple different ways.
Absolutely. You mentioned the other two members of your show, and I want to spotlight them if we can briefly. Brittany, you mentioned your brother Troy, Troy Lilly, who is the predator expert on the show. I don't want to overshadow him at all, because he brings a huge amount to the show. You want to talk about someone who absolutely knows the feel of the land the minute he hits the ground. I mean, you talk about someone who just knows, and that's important when you get on the ground. You talk about both Troy and Justin as two guys who, the minute they're there, they have the feel of the land, and that's so important. You know, you've got the science aspect of this, and that's fine. You can know so much you know, about, you know, genomes and species and whatnot, but it's so important to have that actual on the ground feel and know what you're doing once you get in the woods. And both of these guys, but especially Troy, knows what he's doing. Brittany, having grown up with them, I have to know. Of course, it's all about experience, but tell me a little bit about Troy and how much you rely on him once you get to the scene of the crime, so to speak.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, growing up and watching him, a lot of my extensive animal knowledge has come from my big brother. I was very blessed that he involved me so much in a lot of that work. And I've been in the field with multiple different teams, different people in search of different aspects of cryptozoology. But there is a safe space that I have and a comfort of knowing that I don't really want to be in the field with anybody other than my brother. And we also call Justin our brother from another mother because we're in the same field. We kind of grew up around each other. Mm-hmm. You begin to have a, I'm trying to put this in a way for the listeners to get, is like, you almost can hear each other's thoughts without speaking. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what Troy and Justin do, they have that. But being around my brother for so long, I pick up on that as well. Right. And so he has taught me so much. And I know that I can still go to him when I'm out of sorts on something. And he'll, even though it's hard for him to kind of come into my crypto side a little bit, I think more or less what it's become more recently in years, I appreciate that he will help me through it and say, if this animal does exist, well, then this is what we need to look for. And it's funny you mentioned when they are in the field, and they are extensive field guys. I mean, these are guys that my brother, especially, is a person that can go out and he will help you get this animal and he will find it and he will bring it back. Like, give him a couple of days, they're going to get this animal. And having that background applied to my field work is huge, because we can be in the middle of a forest and he will sense something or hear something that I may have missed, and he will stop dead in his track and he will be able to immediately identify what that is. And that's huge because his specialty is behavior. And so being able to know behavioral of different animals is massive. That can change the ballpark completely. So having him honestly in the field, I wouldn't want anybody else, to be quite honest with you. There's multiple reasons. Having him there is huge, and it's an advantage for cryptozoology and specifically for this show.
And boy, you want to talk about a guy who's, I mean, he's gentle, but at the same time, if you ever had the living embodiment of a guy who would be Wolverine, it has to be Justin. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who is in the field, can take a hit and keep on ticking, but also knows different things about the forest that nobody else would know. I mean, that's Justin. Yeah. I mean,
that is
Tim. Yes.
You just totally hit a point.
Thank you. I have been saying that to them for weeks at this point.
Right. Weeks. Oh, right, Charlie? Okay. So there's a couple in the couple of episodes I've seen. Okay. So there's a, tell me, Charlie, the scene up. Okay. With the Abominable Snowman episode, when he's up on the mountain and he sees the urine, right? And the first thing he does, Justin does, is he puts his pinky in it. You know the scene I'm talking about, right?
Of course. Yeah.
Can I tell people about that?
Yeah, it airs tonight.
It airs tonight. Yeah. So go for it.
Okay.
For sure.
So Troy and Justin are on the track of what they believe is a bear at the time. And they come upon a huge spot of urine, and Troy, of course, looks at it and says, "Oh, look, it's a big spot of urine, right?" And Justin looks at it and he goes, "Well, there's only one way to find out," and goes and puts his pinky in it. And then, of course, Troy goes, "Oh yeah, well, you know, go ahead and smell it." And he smells it, but then he puts the tip of his tongue on it. And like, no big deal. Like, he's tasting chocolate. And of course, there's only one way for a true woodsman to know what kind of urine it is. Well, you got to smell it, but he goes one step further and goes, "Oh, yep, you know, got to know what kind of urine it is. You know, like it's a fine wine. Well, it's either a Chardonnay or it's a Pinot Noir or whatever it is." That's the one way Justin's going to know, right?
So you have no idea how much you just made my day. No matter what else happens today, the fact that you said he's like the team's Wolverine, because I have said that to him. It was right before the first episode premiered. And
Yep.
you know, we're people, we're human. We you know, we get butterflies in our stomach when about he's like, oh, how do you think they're gonna make me look? Because we hadn't seen. I said, buddy, you and Troy are gonna be, if this was X-Men, you'll be the Wolverines.
Yep.
All
That's
right.
exactly what he
Like,
said. Yep.
I was like, you are gonna be fine. Mark my words. And the fact that you said that, and for people listening, I have never talked to Tim before. This
Nope.
is not a scripted interview. That was all right. I feel like
Genuine.
I'm done. Tim, this has been great. Watch Lost Monster Files on Discovery. I have nothing further.
Charlie's been validated here today, folks. Really
Yes,
validated.
I'm just like, this is great.
But he does. I mean, everything from
He does.
the beginning introduction where he says they call me Bite Force. I'm like, BS. They should call you Wolverine. They should call you Logan. I mean, you know, they show the different little injuries he's had from wrestling around with alligators, crocodiles. I even wrote it down. Alligators, crocodiles, cougars,
Everything.
leopards, jags. What dangerous animal hasn't he wrestled with?
He hasn't
Zero.
wrestled me yet. He hasn't wrestled me
Oh,
yet.
that's true.
Well,
He
that's
hasn't
true. He
wrestled
hasn't. Yeah,
you.
he hasn't
You're one
wrestled.
scary primate there,
Yeah,
Charlie.
that's true. Yeah, he hasn't taken on. But I mean,
No, but yeah.
yeah, I mean, and then he's going and looking for these cryptids that could potentially take him apart, and it just doesn't seem like he doesn't care. It's like he's out looking for somebody's lost kid. I mean, he just, you know.
Yeah, jokes aside, Justin is the consummate professional.
Yes, he is.
He has
He
all the
is.
certifications, and trainings and just experience to do that. That the work that he does, the danger that he puts himself in a professional capacity on a regular basis, is something very special to behold. And I feel like that comes across in the show. So like I can make jokes about like, oh, it hasn't wrestled me yet. But like, no, this guy legit
Yeah.
does stuff that don't try this at home type stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
I also saw the Chupacabra episode too, and he also does the equivalent for listeners who don't know, the equivalent of an animal autopsy too. So I mean, he
Right.
does have, as they say in that movie, a special set of skills. He's got a lot of
Yeah, see,
different skills that he
he's our
brings to
John
the
Wick.
table. That's right. Yeah. A lot of special skills that he brings to the table. So it's not just, you know, he's not just popping claws. There you go, Charlie. And drinking beer, but he's, you know, he's also got, a lot of different skills that he brings to the table.
Justin's background is extremely extensive. He's done well over several hundred necropsies, which is what you were just talking about. And you know, owning animals, like right now, he's owned several primates. I don't think there's a single animal that he hasn't owned, handled, raised, helped rehabilitate, what have you, growing up in that. And I will say he himself or there him and Troy are identical on the skepticism. They are very hard nosed. They both have to see it to believe it because they know the animal world so well. It's hard for them both to come out of that shell sometimes, but it is fun when they are able to kind of let their hair down and kind of have that open discussion. But to back Charlie and watching growing up, watching them do what they do, and watch how incredible they are, especially together when they're in a field together with an animal. I mean, in this series, you will get an opportunity to see those moments of the two of them with wildlife and to watch how they interact and how they handle the situation. I will be honest, one of my favorite parts of filming this show was when we would have a down day between wherever we had to go to a new location or what have you, or basically pack up base camp and move to a new base camp location. We would get the opportunity to pull off and just go into the woods. Let's just go in the woods and see what we can find, you know? And having those moments, Charlie joined on a couple of those, and having those moments of coming up on a bear or finding the bear tracks, tracking the bears, and being able to see these animals in their natural habitat and seeing how Justin can find them like that is extraordinarily impressive.
So, Tim, are you familiar with Kodiak, Alaska? So, and how it's more bears than people, great whites in the water, just like very formidable country. I was in a position, like I said, they mix up. We all went off and did different adventures, but there was a day in Alaska where I got to peel off with Brittany, Troy, and Justin, and we were walking along a beach, and we were looking at deer. They have these cool little deer there, and that the bears eat. And there was this massive bear print right in the sand, and I found it, and I was like, Justin, Troy, I think I found a bear track. I had only been hanging out with these guys for a couple of weeks at that point, so it starts to rub off on you. Also, you start looking for the stuff, you start being able to identify stuff. It was so, Brittany. Yeah, I'll second that. Some of the best moments. Which also, we all walk around with phones in our pocket, got videotaped also when we would find stuff that, we weren't expecting to find. And it was really, really cool.
I tell you what, I want to take a break here. When we come back, I want to ask you, because you just brought up an interesting point here, Charlie, and that's this. Dangerous environments. When you finally get out into the field, you are coming up not just against the potential of some of these new species that could be one level above natural dangers, but also natural dangers themselves. You just brought it up yourself, Charlie. You're talking about areas that could have more bears than people. I want to talk to you both about where the line is. Where is the line when it comes to filming as far as danger? Because this isn't your typical ghost show or alien show where you're sitting out in the middle of wherever, maybe a haunted house, and you might get a boo or a little scratch on the cheek or something, and then that's your danger. You might feel like you're frightened. These are actual dangers. So when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about that line of danger and where is the line when it comes to this? Because these are actual real dangers. The show is intriguing, folks. It is a seat of the pants type stuff. And it is not only that, but a show that pulls up real evidence. I was thrilled by the fact that I sat down and saw real evidence in this show. It's Lost Monster Files. You can watch it on Wednesdays on Discovery, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. And again, check your local listings if you're not in those time zones. When we come back, more with Charlie Musha and Brittany Barbieri, we'll talk about where that line of danger is. When we come back right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting, this is Darkness Radio.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them. I just...
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options, all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on...
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. My guests are Charlie Musha and Brittany Barbieri from the show Lost Monster Files. You can check it out on Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on Discovery Channel. Folks, I love this show. I can't tell you enough how much I love this show. They dig into the files of the godfather of cryptozoology, Ivan Sanderson. If you haven't checked it out by now, you need to check it out, please. Okay, so you're on location. Obviously, you're in some dangerous situations. I've seen it in a couple of dangerous situations now. And it's not just the natural surroundings. I mean, obviously, you've been in some dangerous surroundings naturally, where, as you mentioned before the break, Charlie, being in an area where there may be more bear than people. But even with species that you don't know much about, you have some documentation. You've got some of Sanderson's documentation that gives you an idea of what you're up against, but you have no personal experience with. So let me ask you first, Charlie, where do you believe that line is? Where do you say, you know what, maybe it's time for us to pull up stakes. Maybe we've subjected ourselves to enough of this. Maybe we have enough evidence for film for us to pull up stakes and call this an episode.
Sure. So for me, it's about, this goes back to all the way back to the beginning of our conversation where I talked about the difference between the idea of a monster and an animal. And like, yes, the some of the folklore around these creatures grows to monstrous proportions. But at the end of the day, we're really talking about potential animals, and animals have territory and behaviors. And I think for me, where the line is, there's no reason for someone to get hurt or an animal to get hurt in the process of us capturing data points that we can then use to prove or disprove the existence of a creature, right? So I don't want to see us put into a position where a bear guard or something has to take action. I would rather heed the signs from our animal professionals that tell us, you know, we've encroached in on this territory. We see signs that this is a large predator's territory. We have scientific devices and methods that we can use to capture evidence. We don't need to be here. So I think it's keeping an open mind and understanding that there's the team is the sum of its parts. It's not any of us individually. So if there are parts of the team that are saying we need to go, then we need to go. We might not all feel that way individually, but again, we're the sum of our parts. We're not individuals when we're out there. So I think keeping the group as the priority and making sure that no one in the group is uncomfortable and no one in the group is in danger, that's the way to go. I'll be a little self-deprecating. I'm afraid of the ocean. I love sea monster stories.
Yep.
But getting in deep water scares the living daylights out of me. I don't want to do it. Like, I just don't want to do it. Brittany will do it. So in that regard, you know, we draw a line where I go, nope, that's too dangerous for me. And if she chooses to take that on, we make sure that other members of the group are there to provide safety, but I don't have to put myself in that situation. I'm not trying to get eaten by a sea monster. I think they're real.
I don't blame you. I'm the first one to back you up on that one, brother. Yeah.
So yeah, it has to do with the sum of the team, right? I don't think any one individual should dictate what is or is not safe enough. I think we need to lean on each other's expertise.
Let me ask you this, Brittany. You know Troy very well. I believe you know Justin very well. I believe you know those two as the ones who would probably take the biggest chances out in the field. Mm-hmm. When it comes to this question, where's the line drawn when it comes to safety and filming? Do you worry more about, say, their safety than you would yours and Charlie's?
That's actually a really good question. Being on the opposite scope of that and growing up in the wild, doing a lot of field work with different types of predators and wildlife like that, I will agree with Charlie in the respect that if we're going out as a team, mm-hmm. and we have other people involved who may or may not have spent time in the woods at the extents that Troy and Justin have or myself, there's an understanding that each individual safety comes into place, right? And being with Troy and Justin, they will take on a grizzly if it means it's going to save us to get to where we need to get to. However, they will always do their part as the animal specialists with our team to make sure that we're never put into such a dangerous situation. Granted, for instance, with bears, you can literally walk right up on a bear and not realize it, right? Black bears, they're pretty... they hate us, so they run pretty fast. But grizzlies are obviously something much more serious. And that was a big factor in a lot of cases in the remote areas that we were. And I do agree with Charlie. It does come down to personal safety. If you do not feel comfortable pushing forward, if you do not feel that you're well equipped to go further, then I recommend you don't, because there have been incidences where we're doing field work and somebody who thought they were prepared to be placed into a more sensitive situation with a large predator could have potentially got someone killed because of their reaction. So it's better for us to, you know, take a step back. And if Troy and Justin are telling us, I think we've pushed deep enough, we don't want to agitate the said predator. If whatever we're up on, you know, there's the ecosystem we play in too, as well, with whatever the specimen is. And so even when looking for the canine species, we didn't know what we were up against, even with that. And people think, well, it's just a dog. It's like, no, it's not just a dog. We understand it's a dog. Mm-hmm. We just don't know the behavior of that dog. So there are things that we still have to do to protect ourselves, to protect each other, to look out for one another. But a lot of that direction does come from Troy and Justin. And if they say enough is enough, we've pushed too far, then we've pushed too far. If they feel, I mean, they'll ask me, they're like, Troy's my biological brother. Justin's basically my brother. And they will ask me, are you good pushing further in with us? And I'll say, yeah. I mean, there will be an episode where you will see how we work together, just the three of us, when we decided to do a late night hunt. And you will see how that structure works between the three of us and how we do that.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I want to bring up that canine episode. Dr. Phyllis Canyon had the only existing body of this canine or chupacabra, whatever the audience wants to refer to it as. I know you don't like the term chupacabra, and you've renamed that genus in the episode, which I think is brilliant, to be honest with you, because you do have a physical specimen now, and you do have DNA evidence of that specimen, which is excellent.
Credit to Charlie, by the way, on that one.
I'll throw it to Charlie on this one. Okay. So Charlie, first of all, you had a device in which you were able to, when you went to visit Dr. Phyllis Canyon, first of all, I want to get impressions the first time you see the body of this canine specimen. We'll call it the canine specimen. Let's stay away from chupacabra. We're done with that word from here on out. We'll call it canine specimen.
Love it.
When you see the canine specimen, first of all, I want to get just thoughts and feelings. I want to stay away from science for a moment. First time you see Dr. Canyon shows you this canine specimen, what's the first thing you think? What's the first thing you feel when you see this thing?
So the chupacabra episode has a lot of interesting...
Canine specimen. No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry. That episode, the chalupa cobbler. but that animal has a lot. There's a lot of heart that went into that episode, because for me personally, I remember when her story hit the internet back in like 2007, 2008, and it was everywhere. And to be there, pulling up to her house, keep in mind, I had not met her at this point. I had not talked to her at this point. I had a lot of questions. And Dr. Canyon spent, there's only so much we can fit in 45 minutes of television, right?
Right.
I spent a whole day with her, and I did not ask softball questions. I wasn't like trying to do a gotcha, but these were just like real inquisitive questions. She had answers for all of them. The specimen was there. She had amazing stories that, again, we filled a whole day hanging out, talking about this thing. And so when I walk in the house and I see the animal, I don't think pictures do it justice. That was my first feeling, was being in the presence of what is ostensibly proof of contemporary folklore crossing over into verifiable science. It existed. It is, you know, I was in the room with it. I could touch it. Like, it was so cool. It was really, really cool. I think I was texting Brittany at one point during that day where I like stepped away. I was like, Brittany, it's super awesome. You have no idea. Oh my God.
I love that message.
I was just like, this has changed my view on this completely. Because I was like going into it, like I did, I knew Dr. Canyon had a specimen, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. the pop culture phenomena around the word chupacabra and how you can trace it back to the mid-90s, and it's been a million different things to a million different people. Like, carving that off and getting to the root of, like, okay, animals are being eaten in this area. Multiple people are saying that they're seeing similar types of dogs, for lack of a better word. To be there and see it, and then being able to ask her the questions that I asked, and she gave me copies of the paperwork that she had from the lab results. It was amazing. It was so cool. I don't know how else to say it other than it was so cool, which I know is not a super descriptive way of describing it.
Did the size of it when you saw it surprise you? I mean, considering the size of the animals it takes down, the fact that it drains the blood of some of these animals and some larger animals, did it seem a little too good to be true?
No, it was actually bigger than I thought it was.
Really?
Was going to be. Yeah. That's why I said, like, in person, it's a different thing. Like, you're standing in front of this specimen looking at it and being like, all right, I get it. It's a dog hybrid. There's probably multiples. You know, there's more going on here than, like, one little creature. Like, they're not insignificant in size. Now, for me, the is it too good to be true?
Yeah.
She had verifiable answers for every single question I asked.
True.
You know, I was like, well, how do you know that this isn't a one-off with mange? She was like, oh, I have the reports on that. We tested for these two different types of mange. If you want to come over and look at the taxidermy, you can see where the tissue punches were, where they had to fill it in after the fact. And I was like, oh, all right. I was like, have you ever seen more than one? Yes. You know, like, what, you know, what do you think about nutritional deficiencies for the lapping at blood? She was like, and she's a, you know, a PhD. She has the experience. She has the knowledge. She was able to walk through the different nutritional deficiencies that might lead to that kind of behavior in this kind of animal, resulting in this kind of appearance. And I was, so I, at one point I looked at her, I was like, Phyllis, you solved it. she laughed. I was like, I'm not blowing smoke. This is amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really cool. It was something special.
And see, and these are all the things that people who watch a 45-minute episode are going to be skeptical about and go, well, you didn't answer this, you didn't answer that.
Right.
But again, you have 45 minutes. So it's
right. There's only, but we did test for, we didn't, she did. Tested for mange, had the DNA run multiple times. Because my other question was, you know, the initial time you had the DNA run, it didn't come back the same as the second time. Do you know which genomic sequencing database they used? She said, yes, I do. I didn't like the first one. I felt like I had been taken advantage of, which is why I went and got a second opinion. And she had all the documentation to back that up as well. And I was just like, this lady crosses her T's and dots her I's.
Wow.
She was awesome.
Wow. I do have a kind of a selfish question here, and that's this. I don't know if the two of you have heard of this quote unquote Minnesota monster that popped up in the last couple of weeks that TMZ featured, but essentially, you know, Dr. Sanderson had talked about a dire wolf, and the University of Minnesota project is looking into essentially this Minnesota monster that they're talking about is a huge wolf. I mean, it stands, and they think it might have crossbred with another canid, but it's a huge wolf. It's not a timber wolf, which is common in Minnesota. I'm not talking about the basketball team. but we're talking about a super-sized wolf. And I mean, this thing probably stands 4 to 5 feet tall. I mean, it's huge. You could put a saddle on it and ride it around northern Minnesota. But I had a listener ask me, well, Tim, isn't this just a dire wolf, just like Sanderson would have talked about? Well, no, because the University of Minnesota would have said dire wolf mystery solved, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know what it is, and they're just calling it the Minnesota monster. I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen this report, Tim. It's fascinating in a sense, but you can tell when any of your friends or anyone that reaches out to you in regards to the dire wolf. The problem with the dire wolf sequencing in the DNA is the fact that it's considered ancient DNA. So we are still basically trying to get a lot of that information out of the dire wolf DNA. UCLA has a great program that's doing it. There's also another lady, another doctor in Duke University who's running a lot of process. But because of the advancement within our technology, we're now just now starting to be able to pull from ancient DNA. And when I saw this report of this wolf, there's a photo of it. You can actually see it. It's a large, it's almost gray in color and stuff. Pretty girthy wolf. Okay. What's fascinating about this wolf for me is that there have been many reports, lots of reports coming. And I've actually had people send me footprints of wolf tracks, of photographs that, I mean, we are talking massive tracks. So I do firmly believe that the lineage of dire wolf is still very prominent within a lot of the genus grouping of wolves. And the wolf, believe it or not, the dire wolf was believed for the longest to be attached to the gray wolf, and it's not. It was an evolved wolf species in its own branch off of the family genus. And so with that in mind, until we can actually capture this new wolf, the one that's being seen, and there's another one being seen in Canada as well, and this one's much larger and darker in color, we won't really know for sure. We need to be able to capture that animal, trank it in a safe environment, pull the DNA sequencing from the actual specimen, and then track it, release it. We need to learn how it's acting in the ecosystem that it's in, and what else is it up against as far as other wolf packs? Is it intertwining in those? Because there has been a mapping where you can actually see how the wolves will not cross paths in a lot of different states. So I'm fascinated to learn more about this species, because I think it might actually help aid us in the like of Sphinx with what we're dealing with now in a new canine species, because there's so much to the DNA sequencing of ancient DNA, of past animal DNA that we're trying to link to modern day DNA. But if our DNA data banks don't have that information, which most of them don't here in the US, it really makes our job a lot harder. So that's why I found it fascinating with Charlie's results and my results from the field, how well they matched, because it does mean that there is something happening where these animals are basically migrating more and interacting more, but it's also hurting the biodiversity of this animal. And we don't know what else we're going to find out. So we're really going to have to continue to dive deeper into the DNA sequencing that we even got in the field to really uncover this. But I do stand on the legs of Ivan Sanderson. He was ahead of his time. And I do think that there is a lot to the dire wolf still existing today in basically lineage of coming down through the DNA.
Okay. So let's bring this back around to the episode then. You named the genus Lycosphinx. And you did point out that this is migrating slowly north. Are you seeing it more migrating slightly north? Because you were in North Carolina for this episode. So you're more north and east as it was migrating that way. But it was this has a lineage from Mexico. So have you seen it migrating more north? Obviously Texas, but are you seeing it going more north up the Mississippi River that way as well?
The reports are kind of sporadic. Believe it or not, I had someone reach out to me about a report in Arizona about seeing an animal that was similar to the one in Texas, which for me is fascinating, because now I'm trying to pinpoint, where is this thing going? Like, is it because it's in a new area and it's trying to fit into different ecosystems and different environments? Is it just kind of figuring it out? That's where this gets really tricky. And honestly, if you want my honest opinion, I don't think our work on this particular species is done. I think we need to dive more. We need to look more into this, and we need to do more field tracking, honestly. But it's hard to pinpoint the direction in which it is migrating to or where it is trying to fit in at. And at this point, they're getting reports all over. But I do want to make a point for the listeners. When the general audience thinks mange, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, maybe it's just mange. For the general public, an animal that actually has a mange, they really are very lethargic. They barely walk well. They cannot hunt most of the time. That is why they die, because they have no energy. That disease is debilitating. It is absolutely horrible for our wildlife. And so when you see a coyote with mange, most likely the reason why they are so skinny is they haven't been able to eat. They don't have the strength to take something down. So when you look at an animal like what Dr. Canyon has, that did not have mange, That thing had the strength to take an animal down. Now, whether it drinks blood like a vampire, who knows? We haven't seen the behavior of it yet.
Right.
But definitely not mange. We can say this across the board. An animal with mange, I've grown up with animals with mange, bears, different animals. You have to understand it is debilitating to that species. It cannot hunt. It can't do anything.
Well, to me, it seemed more like when you look at its behavior patterns, when you look at how strong it is, how swift it is, it seems like an invasive species. Is that fair to say?
I think anytime you get a species like this that's not from that area or supposed to be in that area, it would be considered invasive because it's not, that's a yes and no question, at least on the animal side for me. Because if it is breeding with coyote and we're looking at Mexican wolf, you know, coyotes are all throughout North America.
Yeah.
All throughout, all over. There's not a single place. So ultimately, that family is going to pretty much bleed in pretty well. I think it's blending pretty well, but because it's not a normal canine species for that area, then I would look at it as invasive. Most of the time invasive species are placed here. Like we have in Florida, we have the iguanas down south, right? People just can't stand them, but I love them for the record. Mm-hmm. But they are considered invasive because they're everywhere. They're taking over the natural resources, the natural environment. They're doing damage to natural plants for a lot of the botany going on. So I'd like to know more of how invasive these creatures would be to this ecosystem. And we're just not at that level of understanding it.
Yeah. To piggyback on that, if they are, you know, maybe certain genetic attributes only manifest in perfect situations, right? Where maybe there's recessive genes and, you know, one of these pops out every couple of years. But otherwise, the genetic material is buried into these populations that they've blended into, then I would say no. I'll just back Brittany up that we'd have to see more of them to give them that label, right? But the genetic material is out there, obviously, and they are procreating, so.
That's true, yeah. When you see the episode, there's the attempt to try and catch one in order to study it, and it was pretty evasive.
Super fast,
yeah, that to say the least. In your opinion, having made the attempt once, how do you try to make the attempt to do it again? Have you sat and kind of kicked it around and tried to figure out how you would change things in order to try and do it again?
I think the biggest thing we would need to do in this particular case, this was, you know, mere chance, honestly, to find the actual path, to be able to actually catch it on thermal, which was massive for us after hours of watching. But I do think Penny helped, but Penny was fine for all of our viewers and listeners.
Yeah, thank God.
Penny did well.
Yeah.
Penny was fine. We would never, just for the record, put an animal in any situation that could have been deadly or, you know, horrible for all, you know, purposes here. But I do think the animal was moving very fast. I think there could be multiple bait situations for us to kind of get the animal to slow for the scent of smell to kind of, but it was in a very familiar territory. It does that path all the time. You could see the burnout in that path that it takes. And also I'm going to have to be honest, a trank. We really, really needed to utilize the trank gun, which Justin is a specialist in that. He knows how to do it. And I think honestly, should we go back, and I think we will, to do another investigation regarding this particular canine, I do think that these are a couple of different advantages that we do need as far as a stakeout and try and get it. The trank is going to really advance us and help us, but we need to slow the animal down, which means different bait traps to kind of throw it off its guard for a second to where it stops. And in that stop, that's when we can trank it.
Is it giving the animal too much credit to say that maybe it sense that you could have been around, that you guys could have been around, and that it sensed that, and maybe it didn't bite, it didn't take the bait?
Oh yeah. I mean, if I'll be honest with you, that animal already knew we were there.
Okay.
As soon as it came out, it realized, oh my gosh, that I'm not alone. Our scent of smell is one of the strongest scents and odors in the wild. And I can guarantee you that if you're out hiking and you're like, I didn't see a single animal, that's because they smelled So that's a long time ago and dodged. So when that dog smelt us, yeah, he was like, I'm out of here. I don't even care about this goat. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what this is about, but I'm out.
I kind of got the feeling that it sensed one of you was around and didn't, it didn't take the bait. So, yeah.
I would add a technique that I would like to see applied if we get the opportunity to do it again would be, so that was an anomaly, right? That was a one-off. Call from the farmer. I'd like to go to an area where there's more sightings, right? I'd like to go to an area where sightings are densely reported, and take that approach. You know, the more the merrier.
Yeah.
If there's a bunch of them.
Yeah. Then you've got a better chance of, trying to get one.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Charlie, you're right. Yeah. I mean, rather than try to take a shot at one and trying to rope one in with different techniques, why not take a shot at many? And you know, it's the fishing technique, right?
Yeah. I want to go back to Cuero, Texas. That seems like the fishing hole for these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The zoo there, even in Houston, they get a lot of reports of people saying they've seen them, they've hit them. Yeah. Definitely a place to go.
Just real quick, as we're starting to close up things today, you have many different creatures that you're looking for this season. Can you give us an idea, and maybe Charlie, you want to field this one, the different creatures that you're looking for this season?
Yeah, sure. So obviously I'm going to say it, don't yell at me, the chupacabra was the was the lead in.
Okay.
Abominable snowman, yeti, snow ape, however you want to describe him, was the second. But then we start to do a little bit more. There's the wild man, which is more of a missing link story than it is necessarily a Bigfoot story, which is very interesting. The Thunderbird is the topic that we cover, which is really fun because you want to talk about a rich history across multiple cultures and ways to describe what a Thunderbird. You ask five different people what a Thunderbird is, they're going to give you five different answers. So that one was fun. We went to Kodiak, Alaska for the sea monster that is allegedly in that area, which was exciting for me because I was like, this is my favorite genre. And then probably my favorite trip was Arkansas. We head to Arkansas to look for a certain, I'll keep it vague, a certain reptilian legend.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, I encourage everyone to check out Lost Monster Files. Again, a fantastic show. I think the dynamic that your team has is amazing. I think that we didn't really even get into equipment and the technology, but you're using state-of-the-art technology. There's the 3D scanners that you guys are using, mm-hmm. along with drone technology that you're using. Absolutely astounding. The fact that you're scanning tracks, you're scanning it. The one scan that you did of the canine specimen, Charlie, that you were able to cast, you know, models and be able to create skulls and things like that. I mean, stuff that's mind blowing that you don't have to degrade any of this stuff. You know, you don't have to degrade casts or anything, mm-hmm. And do casts upon casts upon casts. You can just create. It is simply astounding. I mean, some of the technology that you guys are bringing to the forefront is groundbreaking.
And that's all credit to Discovery. Discovery and Anomaly, the people that, you know, produce the show, understand how much that brings to the table. And the fact that they were able to secure these things for us has been a dream come true.
Well, it's simply amazing. Folks, I encourage you to check out the show, please. Lost Monster Files, Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Check your local listing on Discovery. Check out this show. Charlie Musha, Brittany Barbieri, I want to thank you so much for being with us today and telling us all about the program.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thank you both. And best of luck in the future.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to thank Charlie Musha and Brittany Barbieri for being on the program today. Again, Lost Monster Files airs Wednesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time and Pacific. Again, check your local listings for availability in your area. Folks, again, I can't stress this enough. I absolutely love the show. I want you to check this show out. It's just the way they do this show. It's the combination of the dynamic between the team, the equipment they're using. The equipment is so state-of-the-art and new, it's going to blow your mind. And the fact that they're taking these files of renowned cryptozoologist Ivan Sanderson, they're bringing him to the forefront. They're building on top of what he's done, and they're getting actual evidence. I can't stress this enough. They even renamed the Chupacabra genome and genus. It to me, this is just so fascinating. And I mean, go ahead and be skeptical. You heard Charlie himself talk about how thorough they were with Dr. Canyon. Obviously, there's not enough time in 45 minutes to, you know, show you all the extras of the interviews with some of these specialists so that you yourself can sit back and go, well, with a skeptical mind, I'm as satisfied as they are. Yeah, can't do that. Maybe on the, if they ever release it, do they release DVDs anymore? I don't think they do, but if they ever come out with some digital extras, maybe you'll get that. Maybe you'll get the hours and hours of Charlie sitting with Dr. Canyon so that you too can be as satisfied as he was. I don't know. Who knows? But I'll tell you, I think you're going to be impressed with what you see. I really do. I really think Discovery has something special on their hand with Lost Monster Files. So give it a try. I think you'll be impressed. I know I was. So there you go. Coming up on the weekend, again, be a light in someone's darkness. Go out there and help someone. It's fall, folks. Those leaves are coming off the trees, and people are going to need help with their yards. They're going to need help with their houses, getting winterized for winter. Again, if you're in the South and you need, and actually all over the U.S., if you've got $5, $10, you want to help someone in the South that's been affected by one of the hurricanes, whether it be Helene or Milton, please reach out and dedicate that $5 or $10 to an organization that's helping. Again, I want to stress an organization that's helping, not just any old organization. And we want to get that money to people who have been victims of either hurricane and desperately need that help. I mean, my God, you look at that devastation. Just because we're a couple of weeks out from the hurricane, it's not that it's not that that goes away, you know, that emergency has gone away. It's not that people's lives have just been, because we're a couple weeks out and you don't hear the reports anymore, that people have just picked up and moved on and insurance is taking care of everything and people have food now and everything's all good and we can move on with our lives. That just hasn't happened. In fact, there are still people that don't have basic necessities, basic needs, that desperately need your help. It's happening in Asheville, North Carolina. It's happening in Florida. It's happening in Tennessee. It's happening in Kentucky. No, not Kentucky, but Tennessee. It's happening in the Appalachians. So please, folks, if you have just a little bit of money this weekend, be sure to put it to good use and put it to an organization that's actually going out there and helping. That's just the way you can add your light to the darkness and help someone out there who needs your help. Otherwise, go out there and have some fun this weekend. By gosh, there's, you know, I was saying when we were doing Supernatural News with Mally, I think I'm going to put the blog up with the Nosferatu trailer. You got to check this trailer out. Man, it looks like a once-in-a-lifetime movie. There's some other movies that are out there right now. They keep releasing a movie a week, it seems like, that looks pretty darn good. Might as well take in a movie this weekend, right? We have good shows coming up. I know I keep saying this. You got to be tired of me beating this drum, but haven't the shows been pretty good lately? I think they have been. I think they've been pretty darn good, and we're just going to keep hitting them out of the park. I got more for you next week. I did hint this week that next week's True Crime Tuesday has to do with, let's just say, some violent moms. That's right. Just imagine going over to your friend's house, thinking his mom is all sweetness and light, and it turns out she's got a violent streak. Maybe she's a murderer. Think about it. We're talking killer moms on True Crime Tuesday. Yeah, there's a topic for you. Little tease for you for the weekend so you can get reared up and ready to go for Tuesday. I think that does it for this week. Check out the store, darknessradioshow.com /store. You'll see it when you get to darknessradioshow.com. Click on the store tab and support the show, please. Keep us going then in that way, or visit our sponsors. That's always appreciated as well. And again, a simple thank you as we get into the season that we revolve around here in the paranormal. Again, there's always an attitude of gratitude when it comes to all of you who sit down and spend your hard-earned time with us. But again, I just want to say thank you one more time in another week for sitting down and really giving us your time and attention and listening to these shows. It means more than you know. And even the feedback you give me on social media and taking the time to drop me a note or drop me a note in emails or however you reach out to me, that time that you're taking is not ignored. Even if I don't get back to you right away, I have a thousand things going on during the day, but I eventually will get back to you. And if it's a short answer, I'm sorry. Sometimes I don't have time to write a very long response, but I do treasure each correspondence that I have with you. So I want to thank you guys for continuing to be interactive with me and letting me know who you'd like to hear on the show or what you liked about a particular show or giving me news stories, whether it be for Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals or for Supernatural News. I love the fact that you guys are interactive with the show. It shows me that you're just as passionate as I am to put it together. I'm just as passionate now as I was 18 years ago. Think about that. So every week I look forward to putting together the best shows I can for you and giving you the best effort that I can possibly give you. There's days I start my day 7-8 o'clock in the morning and I don't go to bed till 4 o'clock in the morning. And I get about 3-4 hours sleep. And I don't say that so you can go, oh, poor Timmy. Oh, no. No. Mm-mm. I don't say that to be a martyr. I say that to let you know that the passion is there and that I want to continue to work hard for you guys and continue to work hard to make this show the best I possibly can. I just need to know if there's anything more that you need from me, because I constantly strive to want to make this show better. So if you have a suggestion, drop a line, tim@darknessradio.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Until then, my friends, we'll see you next week. For Mally Fox, for Jessica Freeberg, and for Beer City Bruiser, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you for tuning in to the best in true crime and paranormal podcasting. You've been listening to Darkness Radio.
Chances are, you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info, and if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.